The water was cold, dark, and murky. I tried to bang on the boat to attract attention, but something in my head said, "Get out." It's not natural to strap yourself into something which floats perfectly stably and then turn yourself upside down. "I'm going to drown," I panicked. So I reached forwards, I pulled the release toggle, the spray deck flew off. I struggled and splashed, forgetting everything about how to get out of a kayak properly. "Man, it's cold," I thought, as I surfaced beside the kayak and saw the instructor's disappointed face. He knew I'd learned absolutely nothing by panicking. And I felt like he'd let me down. Why had he taken so long to come to my aid? I wonder if you've ever experienced something like this. I don't mean the turmoil of practicing rolling in a kayak. I mean a kind of inner conflict which controls your actions and blinds you to what you know is true. A situation which makes you give up hope and turn away from safety. Our psalm this evening addresses similar circumstances. King David examines the way that people deal with distress. And in response, David gives us a template for dealing with that distress. He says, "Turn to the Lord, trust in the Lord, and then you will receive from the Lord." And these are my 3 points this evening. Unlike all good preachers, you'll see they don't begin with the same letter. Let's just start by considering briefly the background to our text. Like many other psalms, this one's very general. It looks to impart principles of godly living rather than specific advice in particular situations. But it is helpful to know something of the context. Historically, Psalm 3 is seen as a morning prayer and Psalm 4 an evening prayer. And if this is so, then they were both written when David has to flee for his life from his son Absalom. He feels surrounded on all sides, and he cries out to the Lord in his distress. But alternatively, this psalm, Psalm 4, may have been written at a time of famine in Israel. There's a hint of that in verse 7. But it's the general pattern of gaining relief from distress that is relevant to us today. There are actually two distresses that are being dealt with in the psalm. The specific case is famine or family troubles. But there's a sense of a bigger anguish. The people are wandering from God because of their plight. And as their king, he pleads with them to return. So this second distress is the greater worry David has for their spiritual welfare. And it's in this doubly distressing situation that we hear his message. I'll repeat it. If we turn to the Lord and trust in the Lord in distressing circumstances, we will receive joy and peace from the Lord. And as we step through the psalm with David, we can learn from his experience and apply it to his own lives, to our own lives. So let's look first at verses 1 to 3. Let me read them again to you. "Answer me when I call to you, O my righteous God. Give me relief from my distress. Be merciful to me and hear my prayer. How long, O men, will you turn my glory into shame? How long will you love delusions and seek false gods? Know that the Lord has set apart the godly for himself. The Lord will hear when I call to him." Now, my first point is that David turns to the Lord. You see, the people have been taken in by a corporate deception. And the deception is this. They love delusions and seek false gods, but they don't know that they're delusions and false gods. Their distress has clouded their judgment. God hasn't come to our aid, they think, so why shouldn't we start to look elsewhere for relief? But look at the language that David uses about where their hope is. Delusions, false gods, or in the NIV footnote, a dishonoring of David's glorious one. Lies. David sees that the men of Israel are deluded, they are deceived, but they do not know it. There's a corporate deception going on. And you get a sense of David's exasperation in verse 2. How long until you wake up from your deception? Until you realize the mistake you're making? He longs for them to turn, to return and worship the righteous God. This deception has just swept them up, oblivious. And so in response, David turns to the Lord, and his prayer is based on God's nature. He prays to, verse 1, a righteous God who will vindicate the godly, a merciful and gracious God who will act even though we're undeserving, a God who listens, verse 3, and a God who is powerful to act. And literally that third line reads, make a spacious place for me. It's like a small child in a crowd. He cries out to his father, who he knows is mighty and powerful enough to push back those crowding in on him and give him relief. By turning to the Lord, the deception becomes clear, and he sees the delusions for what they are. And so he offers them the chance to come into the godly community. Verse 3, know that the Lord has set apart the godly for himself. No false gods, no delusions, just fellowship with God. And the focus of this community is David. He has a particular privilege to lead the people under God, so he reassures them as their king. The Lord hears him, David, when he prays. David encourages the deceived to turn to God, to focus on him through David. So how does this apply to us today? And I guess the first application is quite simple. Do we turn to the Lord in our distress? I mean, you can easily find out where you turn by self-reflection. Where you turn first, it shows a lot about where your faith is. But we all know where we ought to turn. A righteous, gracious, merciful God, or delusions. The choice is pretty obvious. Or is it? When we're in the middle of a crisis, things become blurred. We miss the obvious, don't we? Sherlock Holmes and Dr. Watson went on a camping trip. And in the middle of the night, Holmes woke up and he nudged his faithful friend and asked, Watson, look up at the sky and tell me what you see. Watson replied, I see millions and millions of stars. What does that tell you? Holmes asked him. Watson pondered for a minute. Astronomically, it tells me there are millions of galaxies and billions of planets. Astrologically, I observe that Saturn is in Leo. Orologically, I deduce that the time's perhaps 3:15. Theologically, I can see that God is all-powerful and we're small and insignificant. Meteorologically, I suspect that we will have a beautiful day tomorrow. Why, what does it tell you? And Holmes was silent for a moment and then spoke. Watson, you idiot. Someone's stolen our tent. And like Watson, we tend to miss the obvious. The obvious choice of turning to God rather than the deceptive hopes that the world around us offers, because those hopes are so believable. And the reason is sin. Sin is a delusion. It sets up false gods which cannot deliver. The devil schemes through the messages we are bombarded with every day. He shouts at you that your life will be easier if you get to the next pay scale or you get that new car. The whole of secular society is based on a delusion about death, the false gods of money, fame, sex. And it twists the biblical pattern which shows us how God would have us live. It plays to our fallen human nature, which, verse 2, loves delusion and seeks false gods. And so we must learn to bring our distresses to God. And like David, we will see the corporate deception, the delusions, the false gods, for what they are. In your distress, don't miss that obvious choice. Turn to the Lord in repentance, if necessary. And we must bring ourselves into the fold of the godly community and look to our focus of faith. Not David, but his greater son, Jesus, as Hebrews puts it. He is the author and perfecter of our faith. Because of the work of Christ on the cross, the godly are set apart by God for himself. So turn to the Lord. But as we look further, we see that the corporate deception manifests itself, shows itself in individual desperation. Let me read from verse 4. In your anger, do not sin. When you are on your bed, search your hearts and be silent. Offer right sacrifices and trust in the Lord. And here's my second point. In response to this individual desperation, David trusts in the Lord. The individual men of Israel are tossing and turning in their beds, agonizing over how to feed their family the next day. The sense is of desperation so great that the individual is trembling, a sort of, if you forgive the impression. And I'm sure many of you may have experienced those sort of endless nights where sleep is not forthcoming and the events of the day just flash angrily through your mind. It's like some sort of twisted version of the TV show Mastermind going on inside you. Your mind is quizzing your soul on the specialist topic of my life at the moment, and your soul just has no answers. Why did he do this? Why did she say that? God, what did I do to deserve this? How can I possibly sort it out? Why is this happening? And from the psalm, David shouts, stop. Be silent. In your anger, do not sin. When you are on your bed, search your hearts and be silent. Offer right sacrifices. Trust in the Lord. But notice this. He doesn't say, do not be angry. Does that surprise you? Trusting the Lord doesn't mean mindlessly pretending that this situation doesn't rile us. This is realistic. We get angry, don't we? But David can counsel us to trust in the Lord because he has been there. He has experienced the acute frustration himself. How do you think he felt when he knew he had to go to war against his own son? But we must not sin in our frustration. Paul uses this very verse in Ephesians 4 as part of his instructions on how to live as children of the light. Ephesians 4:27. Do not let the sun go down while you are still angry, and do not give the devil a foothold. The quotation is just the verse before. So instead of anguish tossing and turning in bed, David trusts in the Lord's sovereign power. He is silent, and he ponders the meaning of events. And we too should follow his example. Stop for a moment. Step out of the situation. See what God is trying to teach you. Our society encourages us to be on the go all the time, living for the now, never meditating on what has just come. And if you know the feeling of anxious sleeplessness right now, then David says, ponder with me biblical truths, the nature of God, the basis of our petitions to him, God's faithfulness in our lives. But notice that the pondering is not the end in itself. It's the means with which to bounce back from our distress. Charles Price uses a helpful analogy, which I'm now going to steal. Pondering events and biblical truths without trusting in the Lord is like buying a new Toyota. Let me explain. You might read the manual for pleasure, attend special manual study classes, this week windscreen wipers and fluids, next week an explanation of the pages on engine maintenance, perhaps meet up with a local Toyota club, share stories of how reading the Toyota manual has changed your life, or your favorite sentences and sections. You might even take Japanese lessons to read the manual in the original language. But where does it get you unless you drive the car? And so David encourages us to ponder in order that we might, verse 5, offer right sacrifices and trust in the Lord. We look back to identify God's action in our lives, and then we look forwards, repenting of any sin we have and trusting in God's future grace. So in your distress, when you ponder, what is the Lord trying to show you? Is your anger totally sinless? Or does it come from something that the Lord is trying to highlight? Your dented pride, because you know that you aren't in control of what happens in your life. Your sense of self-importance, irritated by that manager who ignored you the other day because you took a stand for Christ in the office. And what are the right sacrifices that we should offer as New Testament believers? Paul writes, offer your bodies as living sacrifices, holy and pleasing to God. And as we turn to the Lord, and look to Christ, now we must surrender our life to Him and trust that He has made the ultimate sacrifice for us by dying on the cross in our place. So what we've seen so far is that David trusts in the Lord rather than the corporate deception, and he fights individual desperation by trusting in the Lord. Sorry, the first was turns to the Lord. Let's read verse 6 to 8 now. Many are asking, who can show us any good? Let the light of your face shine upon us, O Lord. You have filled my heart with greater joy than when their grain and new wine abound. I will lie down and sleep in peace. For you alone, O Lord, make me dwell in safety. And this is the third point, the pinnacle of the psalm. David is now able to receive from the Lord. It's interesting to note the two dynamics going on through the psalm. The language of David becomes increasingly peaceful and God-focused. In verse 8, the senses of simultaneously lying down and sleeping, totally zonked out, as my dad might say. But the people haven't progressed anywhere. Whether the psalm addresses three stages of godless helplessness, or three different responses to distress, and it could be both, the people are stuck in overwhelming despair. Many are asking, who can show us any good? They have no hope. They don't know where to look. The combination of deception, verse 2, and desperation, verse 4, has made them despair, verse 6. In contrast, David's new perspective means that he is in the right place to receive from God. He knows where to look. And he asks God to let the light of his face shine upon the godly community. Divine compassion, blessing, mercy, and grace. But the psalm has another surprise up its sleeve. Even as David receives from the Lord, the original problem hasn't gone away. We see that because the people are still looking for relief in verse 6. But it is as if the foggy drizzle of David's distress has been burnt away by the radiance of God's glory. Peace reigns supreme in his heart, verse 8. Surely he remained concerned for the people of Israel, but now he feels a new safety. And God has worked very fast in David's heart. In just the space of 8 verses, he's gone from answer me to the Lord will hear me when I pray. Give me relief in my distress, to you have filled my heart with joy. His trust is rewarded. He's filled with joy. And verse 7, this joy is greater than when the people's grain and wine abound. Imagine the celebrations in Israel at harvest time. At last, families could be fed, rationing broken, grain abounds. But David's joy is greater even than this. And his joy is greater than if God had acted to solve the problem, because his joy is independent of the solution. Had David been God in verse 1, he might have ended the famine. But although it continues and physical hunger may pain his stomach, his new joy in God outweighs it tenfold. The writer to the Hebrews says, no discipline seems pleasant at the time, but painful. Later on, however, it produces a harvest of righteousness and peace by those who have been trained by it. And actually, without this crisis forcing him to turn to God and trust in God, he would not have been able to appreciate receiving from God. Many of you may remember when my dad was unemployed around this time last year. He never seemed to get a job after interviews. I wanted to join a mission trip to Mexico City in the summer and a cipher camp, but neither were possible. It was a very frustrating time for us. Why weren't things slotting into place? And then in the summer, my granddad became ill and eventually passed away. And I can see now how God prevented us from being too busy so that we could go and care for him. And I learned a valuable lesson to turn to him, to lift up my concerns to God, and then trust in his sovereignty. And without that experience, and I only get it from looking back, In future crises, I wouldn't be able to have the peace that I now know is possible. Without this crisis forcing David to turn to God and trust in God, David would not have been able to appreciate receiving from God. So instead of giving way to overwhelming despair, David's focus on and trust in the Lord allows him to have peace and joy. God has used the situation to teach David about himself and his Creator, and he emerges stronger and more faithful. So how does this apply to us today then? I mean, how realistic is it to have joy and peace overflowing in our heart when we're distressed? When every day is filled with the pain of old age, and sometimes the world might seem right when it tells you just to give up living altogether. Or maybe you associate more with David than the deception, the desperation, or despair felt by the men of Israel. Life is good. You're walking strongly with the Lord, but you're distressed because a family member is not yet a Christian. How can you have joy and peace when they love delusions and seek false gods? Well, this psalm says, follow David's example. Turn to the Lord, trust in the Lord, and then, like David, you will receive from the Lord. You see, the key is in the phrase I used a bit earlier. David's joy and peace is greater than if God had acted to solve the problem, because it is independent of the situation. It's a joy in knowing God and a peace of being right with him. A few summers back, I had the privilege of being a kayak instructor. And one of the exercises we did was Eskimo rescues. On their first go, like the younger me I described at the beginning, the student would forget to bang on the boat to attract attention, wait about half a second, and then bail out, leaving us with a swimmer, a water-filled boat, and a lot of work to do to get them back in. And they learned nothing, like me. But after a few goes, they would bang the hull and they would wait, upside down, in trust. And it was only then that they received help. The joy on their faces as they came back the right way up, as we pulled them back out of the water, was greater than the relief they had when they just got out. And how much more calmly they stayed upside down once they realized this. And so I suppose in a small way, this is the lesson that David learnt. And he expresses that in this psalm. You may be upside down, in danger of drowning. You may want relief from your distress. But by turning to the Lord and trusting in the Lord, you can receive joy and peace beyond the simple solution of just getting out of the water. The Apostle Paul knew this. He wrote to the Philippians from prison, rejoice in the Lord always. I will say again, rejoice. Do not be anxious about anything, but in everything, by prayer and petition, with thanksgiving, present your requests to God. And the peace of God, which transcends all understanding, will guard your hearts and your minds in Christ Jesus.